sometimes the imagination runs a little wild. Well, my imagination, I guess, is always running. I can't even catch up. But sometimes I like to imagine the fact that we are one galaxy out of potentially billions, if not trillions, of galaxies. And each galaxy can have billions of stars. So whether or not we have actually found proof of sentient life on another planet, it's almost certain that there is life all over our galaxy as well as all over our universe. Almost certain. You know, and eventually we will find proof. I'm certain of it. I'm absolutely certain of it. I believe life spawns everywhere. I believe life tries to spawn in the harshest environments. And where it has an opportunity to flourish and evolve, where resources and energy and warmth and food are available, life will continue to try to grow, and we will find signs of life on no less than seven other celestial bodies within our own heliosphere before the century, two centuries is over. In 200 years, we will find no less than seven celestial bodies showing signs of prior life. Not sentient life, but fossilized life forms. Asteroids, moons, planets, they've all had, not all, but there are others besides Earth just nearby that had life, and we will find this to be true isotropically. That is the nature of life. It tries to spawn everywhere and possibly be get a foothold. So the imagination comes into play thinking about a billion other planets with sentient life on them right at this moment. Right now, at this point in time, there could be over a billion. But let's just, for sake of argument, throw out a random number. 1 billion other planets with sentient life on. All different versions, variations of our socio-economical evolutions are occurring there. You know, we have democracies, we have feudal systems, we have dictatorships, we have communism, plus many others we probably never even thought of. And there's no reason to assume that anything that we've thought of on this planet yet is the most efficient or best evolved socio-economical platform. Actually, there's little reason to believe we've even scratched the surface of coming close to an evolved socio-economical political system that is best for seeking a long-term survival of our species. But I can tell you, we don't have it happening right now. Someday we could if we choose to craft our own future. But some of the things that I think about, you know, not counting the fact that we each have doppelgangers, we have a finite combination of chromosomes and genes and chemicals and acids that build our DNA structure. It is made from a finite combination. And when you repeat a finite combination of something, technically an infinite number of times, but we don't even need an infinite number of times. Repeated a billion times. But many more than a billion. It's a billion planets that have had life on it many, many times. So that number becomes much, much higher than when we start doing things quadrillions of times. Then when you repeat something like the DNA structure and evolution and the possible combinations that can come out of advanced life, we will find that there is exact matches of our DNA out there. There's also lots of tiny variations of our exact DNA match, but there are other exact matches as well. There is likely an exact match to our DNA inside our own galaxy, and inside possibly every galaxy is the potential to have a doppelganger. But the point I wanted to make really wasn't about those type of existences. The thoughts were a little bit more vague. One of them that I thought interesting is when we look up in the night sky, our closest neighbors are you know, many light years away, and there are other systems that are going to be inside tighter or denser or closer regions. To them, a lot of lighter, closer stars, maybe much, much brighter to them. So our constellations are basically unique. Not all of the constellations, but the combination of all the constellations we can see or we see is fairly unique to our planet or our area, our solar system, per se. But there will be planets where there will be symbols and stars in the sky that do not make arbitrary messages. Our constellations are very arbitrary. We played connect the dots very, very loosely to define shapes that we define. But there is a possibility of seeing almost perfect circles with 8 to 16 stars, or 8 to 16 stars making a square or a triangle. There are some planets out there that will see that in the sky, possibly close enough to them that to those civilizations growing up, that would be a clear sign to them, oh, there must be a God. Here is our proof. Look at that symbol in the sky. They gave it names. You know, there are going to be places where a certain letter or number that happens to be used, or other small combinations. You know, maybe an arrow, who knows? I mean, you could actually have a place where you see an arrow of stars that point in a direction. That is possible. Those sort of civilizations are going to have a very different type of religious evolution. You know, they may eventually all evolve to see that, you know, one God. Some may still believe in many. And neither is wrong. There is both one God and many gods. Because those many gods are relative gods. There's relative gods that are existing as pieces of an entire infinite God. But we're not going to talk about religion here today. I'm talking about the imagination related to the billion other habitable planets and the types of constellations that to some early tribes would look like a message from the divine. And so I just kind of thought that interesting, that what we make for our constellations will be very different from what other places see. And certain places that are closer to the center of galaxies will have a much brighter nighttime, because there's a much higher prevalence. There's a much higher prevalence of the stars. There's closer, dimmer ones, and closer, brighter ones, and many more closer ones. So their night skies, you know, there's probably planets that never have a real nighttime. They don't have the darkness we have. There are planets of all different number of hours in their days and years. Their measurements of time will be totally different. Their symbols used for words and sounds will be totally different. But they will come across many of the formulas we found, maybe even some others. They'll come up with language, and their religions will evolve, just like our religions evolve from the earliest folklore and fables to become what they are today. And, you know, the types of religions, the 20,000 plus religions we've had here have been, you know, mimicked all over the universe, and others as well. But again, I didn't really want to get into that. Some of the other types of worlds. There can be worlds with a single continent. One continent. And so they learned to get along earlier, and they learned to think globally earlier. There will be there will be planets where not anything you can conceive of, and I'm only talking about our visible section of the universe. If we talk about the entirety of the universe and the infinite span of space-time, the eternally infinite and infinitely eternal space-time that is our universe, a universe made from an infinite number of separate nested pockets of relative pressurized space-time, mass energy, heat radiation. That type of infinite universe, then there are, in fact, doppelgangers with our exact DNA and even our exact names, speaking our same language, but they are very, very few. Well, technically an infinite number of them, but they're very far away. For every doppelganger, for every galaxy you pass through that has, you know, a doppelganger of your exact DNA, most of them will not be speaking our language using the same symbols with the same sounds. So to have a parallel universe, the same languages, well, to have a direct parallel universe, an alternate universe, is one where things are different, where your DNA exists and it's a planet possibly very similar to Earth, similar countries, but not, you know, in theory, we are the culmination from the moment of the Big Bang. We are the culmination of a finite set of quantum states. When you repeat a finite sequence of events an infinite number of times, then you will find at every, if you repeat it an infinite number of times in an infinite number of places, you will find that finite sequence of quantum states, no matter how large that number is, no matter how large that number of separate quantum states is, it's still finite. And when you repeat a finite sequence an infinite number of times, you will find that every moment of time, every one of those different quantum states is occurring an infinite number of times. That's what the multiverse means. M-Worlds theory does not mean we spawn universes by making a decision. You don't flip a coin. You don't flip a coin and then spawn an entire universe. Universes need creation. They need matter and energy to be created from. They don't just pop into existence because decisions are made. But instead, those decisions are acting out an infinite number of times. And so all of those different branches are occurring right now. That is what M-Worlds should be interpreted to mean. That all of the different possibilities are occurring in different parts of the universe. Our part has the wave function collapses defined by the macro physics and macro chemistry and macrobiology that we already understand, thermodynamics and electromagnetism, how forces work, what drives reality is the macro world. Things like tunneling and superposition are accessories for the quantum world to achieve certain results. They provide a probabilistic wave function, but the wave function collapses not as dictated by an observer, but by the macro world. The observer being part of the macro world. But I digress. The point being that with an infinite universe and an infinite number of repetitions of a finite sequence of events, every possible age you will ever be, every possible age you will ever be on any planet you ever have your DNA on, the oldest you will ever be, exist on some planet somewhere, and every different age between your birth and that oldest you will ever be repeats an infinite number of times right now and has repeated an infinite number of times for all eternity. There was never a moment in time where your exact DNA was not alive an infinite number of times. There will never be a moment in time where your DNA is not alive an infinite number of times. But these doppelgangers have no shared memories, no shared dreams. You can't talk to them. There's no way to go into their lives, see their visions, join their dreams. Everything that happens in your brain is localized to this pocket of space-time and your existence. So the thoughts of moving around the multiverse, it's not going to happen. We're never going to get out of our universe, let alone end up in any other universe. The travel between them, the distances between our visible universe and our sibling, our next closest sibling, is probably unfathomable. At least as big as our visible universe times three, if not more. Probably more. And we don't know how many siblings we have within the same parent frame of reference, the same pocket of space-time created during our Big Bang events. We could have 3, 4, 5, 10, 20. Not sure. And there could be other pockets, not just the parent frame of reference our visible universe is within, but other pockets of space-time that are siblings to that parent. So there is likely a grandparent and even a great-grandparent frame of reference, nested succession of frame of references created during the events that spawned our visible universe. And so in some of those instances, you have your same parents with totally different brothers and sisters. In some of those instances, you're poor, and some of them you're very rich. And some of them you have a never-ending struggle to try to find food or medicine or water. And in some of those, there's no technology. You're living very basic worlds, because until somebody invents it, decides to invent it, if you have a society that is comfortable living at their means, then they may take much longer to have scientific developments. The rate that a succession of people will procreate and the number of years between generations will be similar. You know, will be similar, but not exact. You know, so there's a potential for your DNA to crop up on a historical timeline that could be as many as 1,000 years in either direction. You could come into existence on another planet 1,000 years earlier in technical evolution, or 1,000 years later in technical evolution. So the types of languages and governments and religions that your doppelgangers will go through will be different in 99.9% of the cases. In such a huge, overwhelming percent of the cases, it's going to be totally different. But there will be these random pop-ups where it's going to be very, very similar, and even others that are exact. everything up in every quantum state up until this exact moment of time has played out before and is playing out right now. But every moment future, every future moment, is that M-Worlds Everett, you know, Everett's M-Worlds branching theory, where the future isn't spawning another universe. It's basically two identical sequences of quantum states up to a certain point. Then a branch occurs where a separate quantum occurrence, some separate quantum occurrence occurs. Now you have two branches. That's what Everett was trying to say. He was not trying to say that we pop worlds and universes into existence. It was that up until a point in time, a finite sequence of quantum states could hit that point in time and then branch off. And that occurs at every different possible point in time. At every point in time, there are an infinite number of other sequences of events exactly like those quantum states. There's an infinite number that were different, but there will be that infinite number over the course of time. Theoretically, an infinite number occurring at this exact moment in time, but as well as always happening. That's the nature of infinity. That's the nature of a multiverse. And it's not far-fetched to believe anything else other than this, regardless of how hard this is to fathom. Trust me, this really breaks the brain when you really start thinking about some of this stuff. But anything else is what's unfathomable. A infinitely eternal and eternally infinite multiverse, as I've described it, is a much more realistic concept. Even if you have trouble digesting it, it is, in fact, more logical than any other alternative. So the M-World's interpretation of quantum mechanics is leaning towards a acceptance that the macro world drives the collapse of the wave function, and we get what we get out of the decisions we make. We drive our future, we craft our future. The past is a collection of decisions already made, and the future is a collection of decisions not yet made. We have a future in front of us that we get to decide. But it is the macro world, as I said, chemistry and biology and physics, that define the nature of the majority of wave function collapses. Yes, there may be others. But in general, the particles do what particles need to when they need to be particles. When they don't need to be particles, they're moving as waves of energy. They exist as waves of energy, doing what those waves of energy need to do, based on what the macro world tells them they want that element or atom to be doing at that moment in time. You know, sure, there's intrinsic quantum properties, spin and charge, and part of that. But they are, that is hard to believe, but it is part of how those energy, waves of energy in motion are moving. And because they're existing at a sub-quantum size, a sub-quantum realm, we would predict things like virtual particles, vacuum energy, renormalization of Feynman diagrams, all the different reasons that we see that we are clearly clearly looking at sub-quantum energy and waves that are deviating the matter we can see off their normal path, producing a probabilistic wave function. That is to be predicted if you have an entire sub-quantum realm. All of the things we see, we can measure vacuum energy. We require virtual particles and Feynman diagrams and renormalization to make them work. So there are many reasons to suspect a infinitely vast and eternally infinite universe in many more scale factors than just our scale factor. It is the combination of a density of energy and density of mass and density of space and density of time and density of heat that defines how sub-quantum particles are going to form the quantum fields as we know them. And so our periodic table will repeat at an infinite number of separate scale factors. So the other worlds where our existence occurs is not just at our scale factor, but an infinite number of separate scale factors going inwards and outwards in an infinite succession that never ends. Mind-blowing, mind-numbing sort of concepts. However, they're the closest thing to reality that you're going to come across through the rest of your life. The explanations I offer you for reality, you know, they are spot on, the majority of them, whether or not you tend to agree, you know. But yeah, that's, I guess, a odd podcast to get into many different topics here. Like usual, jumping around. But the point I wanted to make was that, you know, what we call science fiction may be science fiction to us, but it may be nonfiction on some other planet. The occurrence, every single thing that we've ever seen, because it's occurred once, means it's occurred an infinite number of times and will occur an infinite number of times. But not everything you can think of can happen on a planet. You can't think of, oh, imagine a blue rhinoceros dropping out of the sky from an airplane and landing on a building and running away. You know, there are laws of physics. There is what's called causality. So there has to be a non-zero chance for the causality, the linked causality, to occur in sequence to produce an event. There has to be a logical and plausible and feasible and actually capable sequence of events that need to occur. But if there is a non-zero chance of something occurring, then the likelihood is that it is happening an infinite number of times. That's the nature of infinity. And so much of what we call science fiction is, in fact, potentially being played out elsewhere. Or within reason. There is definitely things that will never be exact. They'll be, you know, no matter how many times you do it, but there will be the potential for things to be very similar or close in many different ways. Then there's things that are always going to be science fiction, you know, like teleporting living matter. You know, we will be able to potentially teleport non-living matter, but I do not believe it is possible to teleport living matter. Our consciousness of what we are is not going to teleport. I don't know why, I just know it's not. Warp drives and faster than light travel, that's a possibility, don't know. Going back in time, pure science fiction, doesn't happen. You cannot go back in time. Time is a one-way street. No matter how fast you go, you're not going back in time. You'll always arrive somewhere, a future, to the point you left, no matter how fast you go. Okay, I guess that's it. Cheers, everyone. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42.